A very good morning to you, my dear listener. Very good morning to you, Namibia. Welcome to Eagle FM, and thank you, David, for handing over the mic on this part of the world. So we're coming to you live and direct, coming to you live from the Ondangwa studio, from the Oshana, the great mighty, mighty region of Oshana. So my name is Mike Oshavini, and I will be with you. I will be with you until the hour of 10 o'clock. So this is Unpacking the Day, your daily dose of what is really going on in business, economics, and politics. So every weekday, we cut through the noise to make sense of the big stories, trends, and numbers making headlines. So we keep it clear, always curious, asking the question that matter and giving you a fresh take of what people are saying out there. So the views shared during our segment do not necessarily reflect those of Eagle FM. So we are here to unpack what others are saying, spark the meaningful conversation so that you can be part of the bigger conversation. So this is your space to unpack headlines and get to the heart of the story. So good morning and welcome. It's a Monday morning. The 23rd of March. And as we normally, what we do, we go back into history. So we go back to look at what happened on this day in African history. So, welcome. And welcome to, and very good morning to you. Good morning and good afternoon and good evening, wherever you are tuning in, from across our beautiful continent and, beyond. So, so welcome to On This Day in Africa, your daily journey, through the moment that shape our history. Now, today is March the 23rd, a date that carries some of the powerful, some of the most powerful stories in our shared past. So let's go back to the dust plains of southern Angola, to a place called Quito Cuanavale. So it is March 23rd, it is March the 23rd, 1988. Tension hangs heavy in the air. For months, Angola and Cuban forces have been holding the line against South African Defense Force in what would become one of the largest battle of on African continent, on African soil, since World War II. So on this day, the South African forces launched a final, a desperate push to take the town of Quito Cuanavale, but they were met with fierce resistance. Angolan troop, backed by the Cuban soldier and Soviet support, you know, held their ground. And the offensive of South African South African forces actually failed. So now, what does this matter? Why does this actually matter? The reason why this is matter is because this battle changed everything. It broke the myth of South African military invincibility, you know. And it forces Pretoria now to the negotiating table. And from those negotiation table, I mean, from that negotiations came the path to Namibia's independence. So, and ultimately, the beginning of the end of apartheid itself. Now, Kwito Bonavale is not just a battle. It was not just a battle. It's a symbol, a turning point, and a reminder that even the powerful forces or the powerful can be stopped when people stand together. Just hold on a minute. I'll be back in a few seconds.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Omutiha wutekirwa kaguna I matina omjo. Chikao shafasa na nana longeshifa ya ishiwike moshiwana. Iye moyao ota ingongotisa mwene. Anangeshifa ya Namibia ombitombwa na wa olonjika. Seisa nina omayakuro nirandisoma yoe yongeshifa yoe kupitira mo Eagle FM Media House. Ngoe tuende pimemeha uka kombanga nina. Kara omkwashi pareki uimwepo yomo programa detu. Moambo, dengera selma, onaraje tatu imu. Datu ndatu, heari jamano tano, oniaji. Eagle FM, the eye.
All right, welcome back. And on this day, it's also we remember the day of liberation. And because of that legacy, because of that Kwito Kwanavale's legacy, March 23rd is now commemorated as the day of liberation of Southern Africa. So it is a day to remember not just Kwito Kwanavale, but all the struggles, all the sacrifice, all the men and women who fought against colonialism, against racism, against oppression across our region. So from the liberation movement in Angola, you know, Mozambique and Zimbabwe, to the brave souls who marched in Soweto, who took up arms in the bush, who endured prison and exile, you know, this day honors them. And it reminds us that freedom was never given freely. It was actually won. And but my dear listeners, not every March the 23rd in our history carried hope. In 1991, on this very day, a dark chapter actually began. Rebels crossed the border into Sierra Leone, launching an invasion that would spark one of Africa's most devastating conflict, you know, the Sierra Leone Civil War. So, and what followed was 11 years of brutality. Villages burned, children taken as soldiers, community torn apart. So it became a war known for its cruelty, for the use of child soldiers, for the amputation. Some of the cruelty we have seen during that war, you know, for the suffering on a scale that still actually haunt the region today. But let also remember that Sierra Leone rebuilt. The war ended in 2002, and since then the people have worked tirelessly to heal, to reconcile, and also to move forward. So their story is one of a pain, but also one of resilience as well. Now, finally, let's rewind to 1970, same date, March the 23rd, the world of sport took a stand. South Africa was officially banned from the Davis Cup, the prestigious international tennis competition. Why? Because of definitely because of apartheid, because South Africa government refused to field integrated teams, refused actually to field black and colored and Indian, you know, players. Because the world was now beginning to say, well, we are tired of this racism. No more. Okay. This was not just about tennis. It was part of the growing global movement to isolate the apartheid regime, to say that racism had no place in sport, no place in international relations, and no place in a civilized world. So the athletes like John McEnroe, Arthur Ashe, would later actually refuse to play against South Africa. And sport like cricket, rugby, football, you know, all followed with their own sanctions. Sport became a weapon of conscience. So it became a weapon of conscience. And every ban, every protest, every refusal, I think, chipped away at the foundation of apartheid. So, yeah. So thank you for spending, you know, this time with us here on this day in Africa. So until tomorrow, when we explore another date in our rich and complex and powerful African history. So this was On This Day in Africa. All right. And good morning to you. If you're just joining us, our time is about 14 minutes past the hour of 8. And we will be back with our thought for the day after this commercial.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming.
When you choose UNAM,
you get credible accreditations.
You get internationally recognized qualifications.
You get a university with a growing reputation.
When you choose UNAM,
you get a head start on local jobs.
You become connected in a growing Namibia.
You stay in the best country in the world.
Because you already know you love it here.
Open your mind to UNAM.
And UNAM will open the world to you.
UNAM is your university, Namibia.
Because the you in UNAM is you.
Oh, what do you have?
Oh, Jesus. I've been going on without actually on being on air. Sorry for that. I just found out that I have been just going on and on and on, and I'm not on air. All right. So our thought for the day, today is not, it really doesn't look like it's my day at all. So I've been going on for almost 5 minutes that I was not on air. So today, thought of the day, and we all hear the saying before, action speak louder than word. So it sounds simple. It sounds simple, almost too simple, but if we really sit, with it, if we unpack it as we like to say on this show, it asks us something important. How often do we say the right things? How often do we make promises, offer kind words, declare our intentions? I will change. I'll care about you. I'm going to do better. But then what do we actually do? Words are easy. They cost nothing. We can speak of love, of integrity, of justice without lifting a finger. But action requires something of us. They demand time, effort, sacrifice. So they reveal who we truly are, not just who we say we are. Now, so here's my challenge for you today. Okay? Don't just tell people what you believe. Show them. Don't just talk about the change you want to see. Be that change yourself. So let your hands speak. Let your choice speak. Let your daily action tell the story of who you really are. So because at the end of the day, the people may forget what you said, but they will always or they will never forget what you did. So that's the thought for the day. That's for the day. And thanks for joining us. And if you're just joining us, it's 20 minutes past the hour of 8. So, and what is on our table? What is on our menu, this morning? So now the 2023 census data, reveals that internal migration is a defining feature of Namibian society. With the commerce and Erongo region actually acting as a primary magnet attracting, you know, these are the regions that are attracting quite a number of young men, predominantly young male workforce leaving the country northern regions. So we will look at this fascinating data, how they impact the economy and the family dynamic in a Namibian society, especially not only in those regions, but in other regions as well. So something fascinating, those are data, fascinating data. We're going to look at that. So, and the front page of our e-newspaper, the front page of our e-newspaper, today's edition of The Villager, it's about the Namibian government faces, a story about the Namibian government faces a substantial repayment obligation of 36.9 billion over the next 4 years. Well, it poses a significant refinancing and liquidity demand that the government must now navigate through sustainable debt management strategies. We're going to get into the story by Ngino Menavali Hangala. So we're going to get into that story and see how the government, you know, see how the government navigate sustainable debt management strategies. So make sure that you stay tuned so that we can unpack this together. So your participation, as usual, will be also part of the show. So when we come back, we get into our first stories. Stay tuned.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the I.
Yes, this is Eagle FM, and thanks for joining us this morning. And welcome. It's a Monday morning, and sometimes very difficult for some people, but I think it's a blue Monday for me. And not because of something else, not what you're thinking, but it's just a blue Monday because of some other things that are going on. Okay? All right. So, good morning. Good morning, Namibia. You are tuned into Unpacking the Day. Your morning window into the stories shaping our nation. So today we are focusing on something that it might hit closer to home for a lot of us, internal migration. Okay? So we are talking about the great internal migration happening right across our beautiful country. So our colleagues at Cyrus Capital have released some fascinating data from the 2023 census. So nearly one in three Namibians, that is 32% of us, now live in a region different from where we were born. So we live in a different region where we were born. So look around your neighbor. You know, if you look around your neighborhood, look at your workplace, the people that you see, nearly a third of the faces you see actually came from somewhere else. They are not actually from that region where you are. Well, you could be in your region, but some three-third of the faces you see, it came from somewhere else. Now, to put that in perspective, our neighbor, South Africa, for example, has only 14% of their people living outside their birth provinces. Now, 13% compared to our 32%. So we are moving at more than double their rate. So now the question is, why? What does this mean now? You know, why this is happening? Okay? Where does this happen? Why this is happening? You know, what does this mean for our villages, for our towns, for our families? Well, that's what we are going to unpack this morning. So that's what we are going to unpack. So, and let me just to understand this, let me paint a picture for you, okay? Now, imagine a young man. Let's call this young man Mandume, okay? So we're calling this young man Mandume. He grew up in the village near Oshakati. And his father was a subsistence farmer. Like so many farmers, like so many fathers in the north. Johannes finished school. Mandume finished school. Maybe even did a year or two at the university or VCT. But there were no jobs in the Oshana. Okay? There were no jobs in the Oshana for Mandume. Well, the fields were dry. There's nothing going on in terms of plowing. The shops were few. So Mandume did what thousands of young Namibians do every year. So he packed a bag. He packed his bag, said goodbye to his father and mother, and boarded a bus to Windhoek. Now, Mandume is not alone. So the scene plays out thousands of times every year across northern Namibia, especially across northern Namibia. Because the data tell us that Oshana has the highest out-migration rate in the country. Oshana has the highest out-migration rate in the country. 38% of people born in Oshana now live somewhere else. Now, Ohangwena follows at 35%, at 35%. Omsati and Oshkoto both sit at 33%. And remember, now, these are the four old regions. These are the community losing the children to the cities. So these are the four. So now, think about this. Why are the people living? And then the implication of that. Why are the young people living? And the implication about that. Okay, which some of the implications we're going to look at. Now, let me ask you something. How many of you listening right now either have a son, have a daughter, or a brother or a sister who has left your village for Windhoek or Wavish Bay? Or could be yourself. It's not about even someone else. It could be yourself. How many of you, as I said, are that persons who left? We're going to continue this after this quickly.
Great news. Impact just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
So welcome back. A very good morning to you. If you're just joining us, and we're talking about, you know, the internal migration, you know, and how that actually impact our Namibian society. So we specifically now looking at the data. This is the 2023, the Cyrus Capital have released some of this fascinating data from the 2023 census. And as I said, we were just looking at that. The Oshana has the highest, not only the Oshana, Oshana has the highest out migration rate in the country, and followed by other three old regions. You know, we say 4-0 region, but the other 3-0 region, the Ohangwena has got about 35%. Oshana, not Omsati, and Oshkoto have both a seat at 33%. You know, so and I want you to think about that now. As I was asking my question, how many of you actually now listening, having, you probably have a son or a daughter or a brother or sister, a family member who have left your village or your town for Windhoek or Wavish Bay or Swakopmund, you know? How many of you are that person who left? And I want you to think about the decision, okay? Was it easy? Was it hard? What did you leave behind? Eh? Of course, I know. What did you leave behind? Now, so where are all these people going? Okay, that's another question that we need to find out. Where are the people going? The answer, I think, will not surprise you. But I think the scale might. Okay, the answer might not surprise you where they are going, but the scale might surprise you a little bit. Now, Commerce Region, home to our capital, Windhoek, hosts about 253,000 people who were born elsewhere. Okay, Windhoek, our capital, hosts about 253,000 people who were born elsewhere. Now, that's more than a quarter of a million internal migrant. That's now internal migrant to Windhoek. So Commerce Region, now not a Commerce Region, I want to say Erongo. Erongo, with its mining towns and coastal economy, hosts another 131,000. So those 131,000 people who were not born in Erongo. So these two regions, they are the one that are pulling people like, you know, like magnet. So now look at Erongo specifically. For example, at Erongo specifically, 56% of everyone living there was born somewhere else. So 56% of everyone living there was born elsewhere. Now, more than half of the population are newcomers. Actually, when you look at that, 56 is that more than half of the populations are newcomer in the region. In commerce, it is 52%. And these are massive, massive numbers. Now, imagine a town where more than half the residents actually came from somewhere else. So what does that do to community cohesion? What does that do to a community? What does that mean for, think of now the reason there's some problems that we have. What does that mean for housing, for schools, for clinics, for infrastructure? The interesting thing is that Kavango West, the Kavango West has the lowest internal migration rate. The Kavango West has actually the lowest internal migration rate at just 11%. For Kavango West, it's just 11%. It's also the least urbanized region, of course, in Namibia. So people are not moving there because it's not urbanized. And they are moving away from places like it. So now, this tells us something important about the relationship between urbanization and migration. So, where there are no cities, there are no jobs. Where there are no jobs, young people leave. All right? And when you look at that now, look at that in a very bigger picture. So, what does it tell us? What does it tell us? And why does it, what does it tell us the problem of informal settlement? Towns like Rundu and Windhoek and Wavish Bay and, you know, are experiencing. So it's just that, you know, development is actually concentrated in towns, and jobs are only concentrated in towns. So that's why we have this migration, internal migration to especially these two towns, Wavish Bay and Windhoek. But before we get into economic aspect, so there is another hidden crisis, if I like. I would like to call it a hidden crisis. Here's where I think the story gets a little bit interesting. Okay, when you go into those, analyzing those data a bit. Now, the migration pattern is not gender neutral. Okay, it's not gender neutral. It is predominantly young men who are living, And this is creating a silent crisis, especially in our northern region. I'm saying a silent crisis. Okay, in Oshana, Omsati, and Hangwena, there are only about 85 to 90 men for every 100 women. 90 men for every 100 women. So the national average is actually 95 men per 100 women. That's the national average. But in Oshana, Omsati and Ohangwena, so there's only about 85 to 90 men for every 100 women. So, do you see the gap? So, this region are missing men. Yeah? This region are actually missing men. They're missing young men. Yeah? Men of working age. Men who would normally be starting families, building homes, you know, contributing to community life. They are missing men. So, now, where did this go? Where did these men go? Of course, many went to the cities, mostly in search for work, all right? And the two regions leading this charge, as we said, is Commerce, where Windhoek is, and Erongo, home to coastal towns like Swakopmund and Wavish Bay. So the major pool or the major pool factor here are, of course, are jobs, business opportunities in those towns or in those cities, and urban development. You know, commerce, for example, has more than 250,000 people born outside the region, over half of Windhoek population. And Erongo, over, as I said, 130,000 people, about 56% of its residents were born, were not born there. Okay? Now, some went to Omaheke. There's also, when you think of Omaheke, it's actually different. Some maybe some people went to Omaheke, not Chodonchupa, where there are, in Omaheke, you have 105 to 115 men, 105 to 115 men for every 100 women. So men are more in Omaheke and Ochodonjupa. So maybe some went there for, you know, where the cattle farms are, and they went where the jobs are. So in Omaheke and Ochodonjupa, men are actually more, you know, compared to women. So 105 to 115 men for every 100 women. But the question is, what does this mean for the women now that left behind? Let's say, for example, in region, in the northern region, especially. Now, and I want the women to listen to really hear this, okay? So I want you to hear this. So, and in parts of the northern Namibian, in part of northern Namibia, you are statistically, the women in the northern Namibia, you are statistically less likely to find a partner. Statistically. Not because you're not worthy. I'm not saying you're I'm saying statistically, you are less likely to find a partner because the men have simply left. You know, the men have simply left. And I can tell you this affect, and in a real sense, it affect marriage rates. It affect birth rate. It does affect marriage rates. It affect birth rate. It affect the very fabric of family life. So, and that's why you see grandmothers are raising grandchildren while mothers work or fathers are absent. And sometimes when we talk the absent father, it's not by choice. It's by economic necessity. And this is the issue that we have in Namibia, absent fathers. And this is one of the reasons. So this is one of the reasons that it's not sometimes, it's not by choice, but by economic necessity. So, but I think there is an interesting twist in Erongo. In Erongo, not long ago, Erongo had nearly 115 men for every 100 women. Okay? Erongo used to have 115 men for every 100 women. Today, that gap is closed fast. It's closing fast. Okay? Why? Because women are now participating more in a formal labor force there in that part of the country. So the mining and service sectors, you know, are creating jobs that women can access as well. So the balance is shifting. So now, could this be a glimpse of our future in other region? Definitely not. So because investment also is city concentrated. So, and if you want to know that, if you read what report by the NIDPD, very, very important, you know, that is said investment are more, are basically focused, especially to those cities, Windhoek and Wavish Bay. So now, if we look at the economic picture, and let's talk about what this migration means for our economy, So because there are winners and losers in this story, and we need to be honest about both. Now, for the receiving region, like Comoros, now the receiving region that is actually receiving the migrant, so the internal migrant, Comoros and Erongo, for example, migrant brings labor. So these migrants actually bring labor. It brings energy. It brings consumers. It also brings consumers who are buying goods and services. So it drives construction. It expands the tax base of those towns, of those areas. But also strain infrastructure. That's another thing that also is straining the infrastructures. Road become congested. If you think of Windhoek, you know, housing become expensive. Informal sentiment grow, which is becoming an issue. Service delivery buckled, you know, it buckles under the pressure. And that's why we have those problems. There were problems specifically in those towns. I know it's a problem in the other towns because rural migration to urban migration is also happening. Okay. So, yeah. So, but this is worsened because, in places like, as I said, in Comoros and Erongo, because of labor, or labor opportunities, because of job opportunities in those towns. So now for the sending region, the region that, you know, sending, this migrant, the picture is blinker, you know, when young, able-bodied workers, when they leave, who remain actually to build the local economy? Who remain? Who start the businesses? Who innovate in those regions? Who contribute to the local tax base? So the North, as from the statistics, from the data, the North is exporting its most productive citizen to the center, you know, to Windhoek and to Erongo, to Comoros and to Erongo. So, and this is what the economists call the brain drain. We normally talk about that, Namibian leaving the country, but it's also an internal brain drain. Eh? So, yeah, which is also a youth drain, a youth drain, an energy drain, a future drain, you know, if you like. So, and think about it. Yeah? Think about this. So, every time a young person leaves Oshana, yeah, for Windhoek, Oshana loses a potential. It loses a future teacher. It loses a future nurse, a future entrepreneur. But it also loses a consumer. Yeah? It also loses a consumer who would have, you say, who would have actually bought from local shops. A parent whose children would have actually attended local schools, a community member who would have voted in a local in a local elections. So that what we are losing because of these migrations. Now let us wade into the political waters now. Okay, because this migration pattern raises some uncomfortable question for our leaders. Now, government budget are allocated based on population. Okay, based on the population. If people are living certain regions, those regions get actually smaller budget. But though the infrastructure in those regions still need to be, you know, they still need to be maintained. But the challenge is you still have schools that need teachers. You still have clinics that need nurses. How do we manage this? Because as people move to towns like to cities like Windhoek and region, their budget grow. But the budget of this region where the migration is coming becomes smaller and smaller, and then, you know, development in those budget, you know, go behind, left behind. And that create that urban-rural divide. So if we're not really looking at this, if we're not really looking at this more, if we're not doing something in the rural regions, so where the migration is coming from, especially as we see it here from the northern regions. So what happened is that, you know, you development leave these towns and rural behind. And at the same time, urban region are overwhelmed. So the Windhoek population keeps growing. Can our capital's infrastructure now keep pace when this migration keep coming? Looking at the housing crisis that we have already there, look at the water challenges, look at the traffic congestions. These are migration problems, masquerading as urban problems. You understand? Really are migration problems. So, and here's a question I want you to consider, really. Now, should government policy try to maybe to slow migration? But how do you do that? Should we be creating more jobs in rural areas so young people can stay home? Or is migration simply inevitable? Is this inevitable as something we should plan? Is something maybe we should plan for rather than actually fight against? And if we do want to slow it, how do we do that without holding people back from opportunity? Because people are going, to these regions because of opportunities. Now, beyond the economics and the politics, there's also a human story, okay? And it's a story of separation. How many of you listening have family members in a different region? A parent in Windhoek while you remain in the village. Children in Wavish Bay while you stayed in Ohangwena. So this is the reality of modern Namibian life. That's the reality. So our family are stretched across region, connected only by phone calls and WhatsApp messages, and occasionally visit during holidays. There is a cost to this. There is a cost. And I'm thinking of a situation, and when I'm saying there is a cost, I'm thinking of a situation where there is a cost of funeral attended by phone. People attend funeral by phone because you could not afford to travel. There's a cost of children raised by grandparents. So while parents work in a distant town, there's a cost of loneliness as well, of disconnection, of community that no longer have their young people, as we say, migration from Oshana, Ohangwena, and the four regions. But there's also resilience. There are families who have made migration work, who have built better lives, while maintaining their connection to homes. So there is the story of Namibian spirit as well. So which somehow hold together even when stretched across hundreds of kilometers, So, yeah, there is that spirit as well. So, now, before you come up, here's some question I want you to think about, okay? So, first, if you had a choice, okay? Now, if you had a choice, would you stay in your home region if there were decent jobs available there? Let's say, for example, there were decent jobs available in your home region, would you have stayed there? Or has the city become home now for you? So if you had a choice, would you have stayed in your home region? Now, secondly, What responsibility do you think the government has to create jobs in rural areas? Is it even realistic? When you think about it, is it even realistic? Or should we accept that urbanization is just inevitable? Thirdly, those who have migrated, do you still feel connected to your home region? Or do your children know where you came from? Or will they care for that anyway? Would anybody care wherever you are, it's home in Namibia? Would they care? And maybe finally, what does this migration mean for our identity as Namibian? Are we becoming a nation of Windhoek residents who happen to be born elsewhere? Or can we maintain our regional identities, you know, while building the lives in a new people, in a new places? Think about those questions, you know, just for conversation's sake. 0833-66091, you can come through as well and engage on those findings, on those, data, revelations. What do you think? How do you take this? What is your take on these findings?
0833-66091. Anangasifa ya Namibia, ombito mbwa na wa oronjika. Zeitha nina omayaguro ni randitoma yoe, yongesifa yoe kupitiramo Eagle FM Media House. Ngoe tuende tuimemeha uu kakombanga nina. Kara omupashipareki uimopo yomo programa detu. Moambo, dengira selma, onarahe tatuimu. Datu ndatu, heari hamano tano, oni aji. Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
So very good morning to you and welcome. So, well, Namibia is on the move, man. Namibia is on the move. 32% of us live outside our birth regions. 32% of us are actually living outside of places where we were born. Actually, more than double. It's actually more than double the rate in South Africa. And this is a powerful demographic force that's reshaping, really our country as we have said. Now, so the pattern is clear. Young people, especially young men, are leaving rural north region for urban centers. Oshana, Ohangwena, Omsati, Oshikoto. So these regions are losing their youth to commerce and Erongos. So most of the youth from this region are actually migrating to commerce and Erongo. Now, there are gender consequences. There are also gender consequences. As so many men are leaving, they're leaving actually, you know, the proportion, the ratio become a problem in those regions. So the northern region have significantly fewer men than women. So, and this affects family formation, community dynamics. In a way, we're only beginning now to understand, I think, you know. So, it's something that I'll start to understand now when we're talking about the absent father absent, basically because of this. Basically because of this. Yeah. So, and economic opportunity is, I think, is the driving force. It's the driving force of migration, where there are no jobs, you know, young people leave. And this is not a cultural failure. It is economic reality. I think that's an economic reality we need to face at this point in time.
Oh, I have a business idea, but I need help to get it started.
My dear, I have the perfect solution for you. Look no further than the Basecamp Business Incubator.
Basecamp Business Incubator? What's that?
The Basecamp Business Incubator is a startup incubator and innovation hub on a mission to educate, equip, and empower visionary entrepreneurs. Tune into the business and economics segment every Monday live on Eagle FM from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. to hear about the testimonies from the young entrepreneurs that have walked through the hallways of the Basecamp Business Incubator. Visit www.basecamphub.com for more information and start your business journey now.
All right, welcome back. And I think the trend demand really, policy attention. You know, we cannot ignore the infrastructure need of growing cities. We cannot abandon the development needs of our rural areas as well. And we must support the families stretched, you know, between them. So those are some of the issues that you will probably need to look at. Yes. So what do you think? What is your take? Our telephone number is 08333 66091. 08333 66091. All right. So you may come through, and there are some interesting, you know, aspect there. There are very some interesting aspect that we look at, especially when it comes to, you know, economic implications. And how that is actually affect the region where the migration actually is taking place. The reason why we have informal the problems, especially in Windhoek and Wavish Bay, is because, you know, this is where the investments are, this is where the job opportunities are, and that's why people are actually flocking to town like this. But the other thing is why, actually, maybe something that one have to look much deeper, why much of this Oshana, Ohangwena, Omsati, Oshikoto, are the one actually losing, you know, their youth to commerce and Erongo. It doesn't mean the other regions are not, but it means that these are the regions that that losing a lot of young people to commerce and Erongo. So one is that it's a lack of job opportunities. It means that, you know, our the inequalities that we are talking about, and I think something that that David was talking about as well, mentioned this morning, the inequalities when it comes to distribution of our budget, first of all, when it comes to development, and also for creating job opportunity in those regions, is something that we need to look at if we need to deal with this issue. A very good morning. Welcome to Unpacking Today.
Yes, sir, man. How are you?
I'm fine, man. And yourself?
I'm fine, my brother. Yeah, Mike. Immigration.
Yeah, that's now our women in the north are less than men. I mean, are more than actually women. Are more than men. And that becomes a problem.
Yeah, no surprise at all.
Yeah,
that's That's why you see every man is dealing with five women or something. They know. Or more than that even.
Exactly. Now, on that point, not making controversial. Now, seriously, let's think about this, and I'm not talking to encourage multiple relationship. Okay, I'm just talking in terms of discussion sake. All right.
Yeah.
So now, if we have more women than men in a certain region, you know, that means there are women who will be, let's say if you have actually 10 women with one man, you have actually 10, 1 to 10 women, you know. So that means it leaves a lot of women without a man.
Yeah.
You understand?
That's what's happening.
Yeah. And then definitely that becomes, then men become actually the prize rather than the woman.
Yeah.
Women are not the prize anymore, but the man is the prize because we are the one in demand.
It's changing the way around. And if you bring in the city, even it's like the more demand, even because you know a lot of women they are not independent.
Yeah.
But like they are financially stable, and there are a lot of young men, they don't have any job at all. Now they become what? That's why. We are laughing, but it's a serious situation.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Then we turn even a blind eye when physics are happening.
Yeah, but the whole thing, when you look at that, it's where do we concentrate? Where do we concentrate in terms of job opportunity? Where are the investments are concentrated? Are normally concentrated in two towns, in two regions, Comas and Erongo. And when you have to think, even in future, the region like Okavango, like the northern regions, when we talk now oil and the gas exploration and the possibility of those, they are also still in those, mostly in those regions, given now the Karas or Ludris, that side of Ludris as well. So, but you see, and where would people will be flocking? They will still be flocking on those regions.
Obvious. It's all about the push and pull.
Yeah.
The pull factor is always when it's having economical advantage, then people start moving. Push is when you start even like grading land, which we used to grade our cattle. You start even making a town, proclaiming a town with no industry.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
You are pushing the people away.
Yeah, exactly.
Isn't it? And it's what is happening. Enough.
Yeah, and that's exactly it. That's what it's saying. It's saying there's no job opportunities in the north.
Yeah, nothing.
Yeah.
Even the level where people used to live, now we are taking it away. Remember, some of us just used to depend on mango alone.
Yeah. Mm.
Now we take that field of mango, a cattle which used to graze.
Yeah.
We can make our livelihood there. Because even the kids are going to school, I'll be able to sell one cattle, pay the institution fees.
Mm.
But all those are going because town to become a runner feeding.
Yeah.
Town. Without any factory, nothing they bring in at the end. Why did they put it up to make even the matter worse? Is they start charging you.
Yeah.
Things like services of electricity and water. But you remember, you don't have any job. But you are living in town like that. It's what I'm saying, it will push you. It will push you where you are going to Ludridge.
Yeah.
You only know Mike from your village, but you are not even related. You don't know much about Mike. You just call, Mike, can I come and live there maybe later on?
Yeah,
Mike also having a family.
Yeah.
Okay, maybe we'll find a job as a security guard. Then you start buying what? You can get out and then you put it up your shack. Any land would you find?
Yeah.
And you'll be, and even people start forgetting about you in the north because you were not able to make it. That's making
that's how informal settlement is actually keep continuing. And we haven't prepared for that. We haven't prepared for that. Yeah.
Monibari was not able to, because now the overwhelming of what people coming in is overcrowded now. They are not even planned for that. Now they have to, it's sad. Remember, now people start committing what? Services like the way I'm telling you, water and electricity, housing issue. That's why we are having so much demand when it comes to housing. It's because of those things.
And it's going to keep happening. As long as you're not bringing...
As long as you are not addressing the village.
Yeah.
As long as you are not addressing the village to keep coming.
Hmm.
Because near Fort Ney, when we get independence, there will be some town eventually just for agriculture.
Yeah.
Like in the north, maybe like now people are talking even aquaculture, which is so more expensive than maintaining even the fish. Maybe we can have that right in the north. But because now, remember, we have a lot of plenty water when it comes to flooding. We're supposed to keep it this way. We're supposed to...
Who's that one who you said, why would I actually do aquaculture while there's still plenty of fish in the sea? Who's going to eat those fishes?
It's too expensive even to maintain it. Because otherwise, other countries who are dancing have a sea like it. Zimbabwe and the other, they're supposed to have a land of plenty of them. But it's hard. It's very, very expensive to maintain. And I don't understand why, as a Namibian, maybe it's a hard time where we start digging those F dam just for agriculture purpose. Because this thing of waiting for the lane to come, and sometimes that the land doesn't show up, then we are just there, donated the food from even now. Is South Korea or North Korea? I know who donated. Something like that.
It's probably South Korea.
Yeah.
We don't really have bilateral relations with North Korea. Yeah.
North Korea, yeah, I don't think so, yeah, it's true.
Mm.
But seriously, we're supposed to be somewhere ahead. We are not doing anything at all. You know, the other time which I'm telling you that, no, guys, sometimes this thing of like a way, you're saying, no, there's no environment.
Yeah.
Like in Elona City alone, it's surrounded by a lot of school.
Yeah.
But if you look, there's not even a factory for chairs.
Yeah.
But the school, these kids every day, they are blocking chairs. Chairs are needed, but all the chairs come from window.
Mm.
You see? It's like you are giving a job away also to window people. Okay, maybe it's a construction taking place, like a school, living, then all the company come from window also. What does it tell you? That is the problem. We have to grow home. Let us have a strategy of growing home.
Imagine if there were no bigger retailers, wholesalers and retailers.
Yeah.
Where would people actually be employed? Because much of people are just employed in Checkers, in Pick and Pay, in ShopRite, and so as you said, there aren't any factories and plants where you have actually a lot of people actually employed. A workforce, a bigger unskilled workforce is actually employed, rather than retailers. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. It's only retailers which are thinking of people and what these services which we need, like knowledge and what, Namu Water, you name it, all those. But when it comes to actual job, which are catering for uneducated people and educated some and semi-educated people, nothing. We don't see nothing at all. And it is a problem where I'm saying, seriously, we need to start thinking out of the box.
Yeah.
Even a mattress company, we can establish in that Elona Fidi. Because Ngela Hostel, they need beds. They need mattress every time. Then we can do it. We don't need to go to Shakati anymore. We do it locally. That's why, you remember the other time I'm having an argument. We make an example of Elona Fidi because they may hit me, but I'm come from there.
Yeah.
And I know the situation which I'm talking about. Remember the other time I said, no, people are getting thrown in the FTM, but remember, even not our police, they are not trained to what? To be a diver.
Yeah.
We have to wait for somebody from Shakati. As far as, and then they can even extend to go to what? Window. People come from Windu to go and take that badge out of the water. Just imagine. But you want to tell me we cannot train even the local people? It's a problem. I think sometimes, I don't know if it's our mindset or something else.
When I look at that, when I read about these data and I started to think, it's true, man. There aren't no job opportunities in those in this region. Take out retailers, you know, and wholesalers, you know, and there are no job opportunities at all, you know.
Meg, I'm telling you, if you go to the north now, then you look the people who are growing up with you.
Yeah.
Those one who stay, maybe doesn't have any relative in the window class now or Vasbe or whatever or Lutrecht. Then look at them now, my friend. Those guys, even they are already smoking. What do you call this? Maka, Nyoma, or Ofagata.
Yeah.
Ofagata. You can't even figure about the cigarette. These guys smoking Ofagata. Nengota Fenyo, Fenya, or Fenya, Kulupe. Yeah. You come there and say, oh, bro, good. I'm not okay. I'm not okay. The guy is telling you.
It is sad, man. You come into place of bars and the amount of young people you see there. Oh, man, the amount and just drinking.
NAD wasted because the people then got nothing to do.
There are no opportunities. Yeah.
There are no opportunities, my brother.
There are no opportunities. There used to be construction, road construction, and any other building constructions. Nowadays, there are more construction. There's no something like that anymore. Malls are actually becoming empty.
I'm telling you.
Yeah, malls are becoming empty.
Okay, Mega, now, as much as people are saying, Mongula, Mongula, Mongula. Okay, even in Elarana City, there was no Mongula. What else can you keep that town moving?
Yeah.
that's why I'm saying, if you see some women, young people who they make it in life because of Mongola. I'm telling you, a person is having a beautiful house like a teacher, but it's just a Mongola.
Mm.
If there was no Mongola, what else? The people are able to live on.
Yeah.
It's a very sad story, my friend. But I don't think our government, they are ready for it. They are talking about Vision 2030, but I don't know how they are going to achieve that if they are not already decentralizing the what economy.
Yeah.
We are only concentrating window much. I'm telling you, the whole budget doesn't go out of window.
These are our own census. If it was foreign, we can say, these are our own data, you know?
So we need to do something. Telling you.
All right, mate. Thanks for coming through.
Okay, cheers.
Great. 08-333-66091, 08-333-66091. So, yeah, what is your take and what is your reaction to, as I said, these are our own data and the revealed reality of what is happening in our own country. Yeah, the rural divide, rural urban divide, even when it comes to development, that's a challenge. It's a challenge that we, as a country, and that we need to really, 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 really take seriously if we need to change the dynamic that we see at this point in time, especially when it comes to migration that we see. When you look at it in a very bigger picture, it's not only about what we're looking at this data now. We said there are a lot of people from the north that are migrating to, especially to Akomas and Erongo, but we're also talking about rural migrations, you know, to urban centers, to urban towns, to urban places. So it's something that we are talking about not long time ago in Rundu. We are talking about Rundu.
So in other small towns, Oshakati, maybe Otapi and in other places. Okay. So yeah, what is your take? Well, what do you think? 08-333-66-091. 08-333-66-091. When we come back, we move into our second story. So stay tuned.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Yes, welcome to Eagle FM. And of course, if you want to stay connected to Eagle FM anytime, anywhere, make sure that you download your Eagle FM mobile app. Very good morning. Welcome to Unpacking the Day.
Buen dia, familia.
Ah, buen dia. ¿Cómo está?
Oh, todo bien, obrigado. ¿Cómo está ahí? Independencia.
Ah, yeah.
Robert.
Yeah. So, how are you? How was the weekend?
Ah, was good, Dr. Mike. Was very good.
All right. No, that's good. You enjoy your independence?
I enjoyed.
Okay.
And I'm still enjoying.
Oh, you're still enjoying?
Yes.
Part of the you know, that select, that elite, you know, who still actually who is still partying, eh?
I have to leave my name. Wait, put your gang only on your shoulder, no. Wait, put your cabana sort of lucky eulolayela. Although your mongo, what are you from Kumanga?
Yeah.
Yeah, but the way,
yeah.
I have for you a question, but first let me thank you. You know, Friday when somebody, the guy I think he followed me when I called.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know how people take it. So, but you try to make him people understand. That's good. People understand to say. Because the guy was like to say, no, my business is not going well. I don't know even what does this independence mean to me. I'm trying to do my business, not going well. But I asked him a good question to say, do you, because maybe you don't understand the system, or maybe, you might doing something wrong. You cannot do a business for 20 years going wrong.
Yeah.
And those kind of things is a good, because this guy may be stressed. He come to the radio, want to raise his stress, but you try to guide him. I like it. Very good. You can keep it up.
All right. No, thank you. Yeah.
Yeah, now my question that the mic is here. Maybe one day when this topic will come to the radio, also come in. Do you think South Africa is doing it enough for Africans?
Do you think South Africa is doing enough for Africans?
Yes.
Why would they do that?
You know, South Africa is having a power to take anybody to International Court of Justice. But all of these African countries which have been in poverty today, South Africa was the part of it to destroy those countries. Now we cannot even produce our own petrol. We have petrol in Africa, but we rely in Europe because of South Africa.
Yeah, no, that's something completely different to what we're discussing today, man.
I just want to, maybe one day, because listen, we are talking about agriculture, but we have the problem of South African Custom Union
what do you want South Africa to do? To do some kind of reparation or what?
Yes, you know, a few months ago, we had like South Africa want to take Israel to the international court. But in Africa, in your backyard, we have DRC in trouble. We have Mozambique in trouble. We have countries who are really in trouble.
But remember that you have
you have a new government. You have a new government, a new South African government, not the apartheid government. So, would you take that government now to, you know, to actually attend to injustices that apartheid did, because they were also fighting for apartheid?
Who's controlling the economy of South Africa?
Well, the new government.
Today. If not, those guys who were part of that kind of abusing these African countries, They are doing South Africa today. They are the ones who are putting even the law of South Africa.
It's still the same year. It's still the same year. Our land is still large share of the land is still controlled by white minority in the country. So it's still the same that you see. Maybe start here before you even go to South Africa.
Yes, but you don't have that power for you to take any country to the world. Let me say like we have now conflict in DRC Congo.
Yeah.
Do you have that energy that power to take those countries to say who was abusing this kind of?
You're a small fish in the pond, really. Sea actually, so even in the
that's
pond.
Right now. Yeah. That's why I'm saying South Africa should do more. For us to have our own things in Africa. Listen, we cannot buy petrol from Europe, but the petrol coming from Africa. But South Africa is there. You South Africa is having energy, is having power to go to complain about Israel or whatever, just countries to take them to go to. But you have here people are fighting in Africa.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, no, that's true. We normally jump to issues, international issues, but while we have actually, you know, our own issues in Africa that we are not attending to. There are a lot of atrocities that is taking place in Mozambique, in Sudan, in DRC, and we could have actually do something as a continent, or as you say, South Africa, one of the powerful country in Africa. So, yeah, I do agree with you in that regard.
Even they make us ourselves to arrest our brother and sister because of Mongolia. I'm just thinking about, are they really doing it enough to you know, when it comes to human rights? Are they doing it enough for Africa? I think they need to go home. But that was just my question to you. But maybe we debate it about one day when it comes to the radio, so we can come.
All right. No, that's a good one. All right.
Thank you, Brad.
Thank you for coming through.
All right, we're talking about internal migration and how that actually impact the economic situation or condition in different regions, and also created family dynamic and socioeconomic situation as we experience it in number of regions. So yeah, that's what we looked at. We're moving on to our second story. Our time is about 27 minutes past the hour of 9. 28 minutes past the hour of 9. So yeah, welcome to Unpacking. If you're just joining us, and this is your daily dose of clarity in a complex world. So yeah, today we have a serious conversation about money. All right. Just as we do always. And this is national money. Our government, like many other business across this country, borrowed money to fund, for example, our government borrowed money to fund development, hopefully development, you know, build infrastructure, roads, keep hospital running. Well, pay civil servant. Much of the borrowing goes to paying, you know, for operations. So the lender were mostly local investors. We're talking about pension funds, talking about banks, insurance companies, you know, who bought government bonds. So now those bonds are maturing, and the bill has arrived. So they have matured, they are maturing, and the bill is now on the table. That's our front page stories in today's edition of The Villager by Nyinomin Mavali Hangala. So make sure that you subscribe for The Villager, the Villager's e-newspaper, that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. So what you need to do is just send a WhatsApp message to 208-241-4144. Okay? That's, and just say subscribe, and then, you know, you will be successful. We continue after this commercial break.
Imbaya rire omba na ii epetraweza kwa ombu ni kire ombe ombi hukusha. Njiviro yoye irire ombupu o hatane na wina ikare na masa kumurungu wa indu. Weriro ngere kusha umune ondengu ukura kwe imba. Una ovi umedia peke o wondola onigongo itatu na hambu umwe mumwe stoo. Kika ovi nki nukukara norupa ondando ya peke yukia nja oshimariva. Owa peresente dano kumyeve vitatu moshimariva. Owa peresente umurongo kumyeve hambu umwe moshimariva. Owa peresente umirongo ivari na dano. Kumyeve umurongo na ivari moshimariva. Itoarerera ondengu jima yu ungura na wakove na wina onyanukite. Ashiesho imba yekute oshimariva shishihina omarifiro. Imba o maoronga nino uyebu haka inina itako na wina rishangita jinyon.
So welcome back, and thanks for joining us at this point in time. It's 30 minutes past the hour of 9, and we're looking at this story, the story that actually make a front page today in the Villager. So what are we dealing with here? So let me put some meat on those bones, you know, on the bones. So now over the next 4 years, spanning from 2026, spanning from this year to 2029, that's 4 years, isn't it? So our government must repay 36.9 billion Namibian dollars. Now, if we break them down, you know, in the current financial year, 2026, 2027, the government owes approximately 10.7 billion. Okay. 10.7 billion. This include now the GC26 bond maturing in April 2026. And it's worth of 1.8 billion plus another MIF facility and the GC27 bond. And also the GC27 bond on alone carries 7.7 billion. While the GC28, that bond adds another 8.2 billion to the pile. Now the Ministry of Finance. The Ministry of Finance acknowledged that this concentration of maturing bonds create what they call refinancing and liquidity demand. Okay, refinance and liquidity demand. What that means is that we need to find money to pay old debts, and we need to find it fast. That's basically what it means. Now, I ask you, ask yourself this. Now think of this. When your personal loan matures, so think of about your personal loan. When a personal loan matures, what do you do? Okay, what do you do? You either pay it off from saving, you can either pay it from saving, or you take another loan to cover it, isn't it? Either you take another loan actually to cover it. So our government faces the same dilemma. So, but it's different for the government, because most of us can barely imagine this scale. It's a scale most of us, you know, I don't think we can imagine. So it's facing the same dilemma. So what does the government need to do? So, but there's another problem. But then you have to think another problem. a big problem. So the interest payment. So they are rising and rising fast. They are rising and rising fast. So for the financial year started, which will be starting next week, interest payment will jump by nearly 10% to 14.3 billion. Now, by 2028 to 2029, a financial year, that figure climbs to 17.8 billion. So, and this interest payment, you know, the interest payment actually eat up about 5.5% of our entire GDP. So, and most strikingly, they absorb roughly 17.7% of all government revenue. As you can see, it keep rising and rising very, very fast. You know, what do you think about that? So every $100, let's say for example, every $100 the government collect in taxes and fees, nearly $18 goes straight to interest payment. $18 goes to interest payment. And that is money. And that's the money. So when you think of that, that's the money that is not going to school. It's not going to clinic. It's not going to roads. It's not going to youth empowerment programs. So, and why is this happening? Why is this? Two reasons, according to the article. First, interest rates have been highly globally. Interest rate have been higher, you know, globally. It has been higher globally. And second, our borrowing need remain elevated from previous years. So it's a double whammy. Okay? So those are some of the reasons why, you know, it's keep happening. So let's look at the income side of this story. So the government revenue is projected at 89.6 billion this year, rising to 99.4 billion by 2028 to 2029. And that sounds like, It sounds like a healthy growth, yes. But here's another problem, okay? And this is critical for every Namibian to understand. I think it's very, very critical for us to understand. So according to the article, corporate income tax receipts have softened significantly. So why? The diamond sector has not been performing as expected. So we all know diamond have been, you know, the backbone of our economy for decades. And when they are not doing well, our treasury also suffer. And there's more. So withholding tax on interest has also declined. The reason is the oil and gas exploration activities, those exciting prospects we have all been hearing about, have actually slowed down significantly over the two past years. And in the process, that has also, the initial rush that we have has quieted. And has slowed down, and with it, some of the expected tax revenues as well. So, here's my question to you. So what happened? Now, when you think about that, what happened if the diamond prices fall further, if they continue to fall? And what if oil exploration takes longer to materialize? What happened? I think you understand better. So you can figure out what would happen, you know, given the challenges that we are facing. Well, the government also is not, I think, let also give credit where it's due. The Minister of Finance is not sitting idle. They have a plan. They have a plan, and it involves several debt management tools. There are captive debt. You know, there are several tools that they are using. First one is switch auctions. The switch auction, think of this like refinancing your home loan at a better rate or extending the term. So the government will start actually switching the GC27 bond in April 2026. So, and this spread out the repayment pressure over time. So that's one, you know, debt management tool the government can actually, you know, use. A second, it's according to the article, it's a rollover. When a bond matures, the government can issue new bond to pay off the old ones. So it's like using, you know, one credit card to pay off another. So, yeah, not an ideal. I don't think that's an ideal, but, well, sometimes necessary. Yeah, so, and thirdly is that liability restructuring, you know. This involves now renegotiating terms with the lenders to ease the cash flow pressures, you know. Well, these are some of the, yeah, so those are some of the debt management tools the government actually want to, you know, to use in easing the pressure of cash flow. Okay. And here's a good news. Here's also good news in there's also good news. It's a good news in all of this. Okay. Our external debt obligations. Okay. The money we owe in foreign currency, at least they are relatively contained. Okay, so we have shifted towards domestic borrowing, and which reduces our exposure to exchange, you know, exchange rate fluctuation. Yeah, so when the U.S. dollar strengthens, it will not blow a hole in our budget quite as dramatically as before. So I think that's a good news. So yeah, and let's bring this at home. Let's bring this home, and why what this mean for you? What this mean for me? What this mean for us? So why we are looking at that? But by the end of 2026, okay, by the end of 2026, Namibia total debt will reach 193.7 billion. By the end of this year, 193.7. By the end, by 2028, 2029, we are looking at 217.3 billion. So these are, how would you say, staggering numbers. These are massive numbers. But how does it affect you? How does it affect you? So when we go out and just looking at this, and what is bringing this out, is bringing out, it's kind of give you really information that make you understand how, where your government is financially, physically. But how does this affect you? When government spends nearly one-fifth of its revenue on interest payment, what does it mean? That means there's less money for, let's say, for example, for salary increase for teachers or nurses or public servants. Eh? There is less money for a new clinic in the rural areas. There is less money funding youth empowerment programs or employment programs. That's what it means.
So, and if this, it doesn't, and when you look at that, when you look at this, you know, it looks like it continues. There's no end to it. Or we don't see any reductions. Yeah, but we also have to be realistic anyway. At the same time, we have to be realistic. So it's saying, we're saying, but the difference is this, but borrowing is not, how would I say it? It's not inherently evil. It's not inherently wrong. Every growing economy needs to invest in infrastructure and development. Now, the question is whether we are borrowing wisely, yeah? Or whether we can service, or whether we can also service that debt sustainably. Are we able to service this debt sustainably? And when we look at that, it doesn't look that way. It doesn't look that way at all. Yeah. But, and here's something to consider, maybe something to think about. The same domestic investors, you know, buying government bonds include pension fund. So that means that your retirement savings might actually be funding those loans. And in a way, we are lending money to ourselves. Okay? We are actually lending money to ourselves. Mm-hmm. So which is not... Yeah, what do you think? Right? What is your take? Okay, what is your take about what we talking about? As I said, borrowing is not evil, so it's just that the question is whether we are borrowing wisely, and whether we can service that debt sustainably, which it doesn't look that way when we look at the way we are borrowing. Okay, and what are we borrowing for? So we were just talking about, you know, of immigration, lack of investment in the northern regions. That's why people are migrating to areas like Comoros and the Erongo regions, where the investment are concentrated. So what about other regions? So, and what are we borrowing to do? What are we borrowing that money to do? What are we doing with the money that we're borrowing? Do you know what is the money is being used for? Do you see any difference, you know, any difference that is taking place in your community that you can say, yeah, this is money, the money we have been borrowing so far. It's actually making a dent in our community. We see this. There are challenges that we still see. Water, energy, you know, those are some of the challenges. Unemployment. Mm-hmm. All right, and old issues, land issue, land ownership, those still, we haven't solved the problems of land, you know? We still haven't solved that problems. So what do you take? What is your take? Okay, 08333-66091. So that's our front page page. That's our front page story this morning in the Villager, in the e-newspaper, the Villager. Make sure that you subscribe, for the newspaper. Okay. For the Villagers. All right. If you wanted to react to that, we're coming to you live from the Ondango studio. 08333-66091 is the number you can dial. All right. So yeah, our government faces a 36.9 billion repayment obligation over the next 4 years.
and this is not a crisis. This is not a crisis, but it demands careful management. I think it demands careful management. I don't think it's a crisis yet, but it demands a careful management. So interest payment are climbing steadily, as we have seen, and will consume nearly 18% of government revenue. So every Namibian should understand what this means for public services. That means that's money that's supposed to, you know, make a dent in our, you know, in many people's, in many Namibians' lives. All right. So, but we gotta do what we got to do. So the revenue challenges, you know, the revenue challenges, from the diamond sectors, slow down and reduced. And there's also reduced oil, exploration activities. This add pressure to already tiny, you know, or tight, you know, physical situation. And the finance minister or finance ministry has tools to manage this, as we have seen from the article, like switch auctions, rollovers, and restructuring. So the shift towards domestic borrowing protects us from current shock, so which is actually in itself a good thing, but debt are just debt, you know. Debt, it doesn't matter whether it's it's foreign or domestic, debts are just debt. Yeah, and this is not just I think this is not just a government problem. It affects every citizen through services we receive and the economic opportunities available to us, as we were speaking earlier. So how do we, as Namibian, balance the need for development investment with the responsibility of fiscal prudence? How do we balance that? Should we be worried? Or is this simply the cost of building a nation? Maybe this is the cost of building the nation. So, yeah. Now, I want to hear from you. I want to hear from you. And what is your concern? What is your concern? This is Unpacking the Day.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the I.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune in.
Very good morning. Welcome to Unpacking the Day.
Better Mike.
Yes.
Your question is like why people are moving from rural to the urban area.
It was not just a question. It's indicated in the data. It was a census data of 2023.
Yeah.
So why they are moving? You know, from the north, especially the there are other regions as well, but the worst are the northern regions actually. Yeah.
I think it's just maybe the lack of infrastructure, because if you have a poor infrastructure, like let me say, you know, longer before from Shakati, just one line, a lot of cars and a lot of cattle and a lot of goats in the road, you know, it's this.
You mean that's what makes people actually moving?
is a lack of infrastructure, because if you don't have water, which can attract the investor to come to open the town, then people are going to run away from because of poverty.
Yeah, no, that's true. Yeah, because of other things like lack of water, lack of energy. I mean, lack of electricity, reliable electricity. Yeah.
Yes.
So
the government need to do more, like to create a better service, good water sanitation, electricity, and others for the investor to fall in love with these systems, and you can come down. So just imagine, you are maybe drinking a pound of water, You want this guy to come and just bring this water? No. So the government just need to speed up on the infrastructures, to create more systems, easier, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So even now, we have a lack of just like internet, you know?
Mm.
Let me say, three, four kids, and they are bigger. My brother, they don't work. So meaning every week you are buying them away. It's too expensive.
Mm.
See, the system which I made, you know, like when you go to big facilities, you find like a Wi-Fi.
Mm.
At least to come up with a system which also benefit the community.
Yeah. So when you think of the North, what types of jobs are available here? So what type of jobs are available in the North?
You know,
what type of job opportunities are available here?
Start with agriculture. Start with agriculture. Opening up a big project on agriculture.
But besides Etunda, for example, how many Etunda has?
Yes,
how many people that it has taken up?
Come again?
How many? You know, employment the Etunda scheme project has actually taken up.
I think is very big. I think it's almost how many kilometers? I think 40 or 50 or 60, something like that. That thing is very big. Eh?
It's quite big, but not really big enough. Yeah.
Yeah, it's big just because of the system which I was not supporting that project. Just why it went a bit down. But I think if we talk about it more, people they will follow up the system and see what they can come up with.
Yeah.
You know, so if the government, for example, we have like the you know, if you go to Rakana where the waterfall,
mm.
you need to put like something like a hotel there, you know, hotel in the Himba, they come there and these guys come and take some pictures, you know, you can employ even already like 100 people in that hotel if you have a big hotel in that area,
yeah.
you know.
So yeah, besides, for example, Etunda, and I agree with you in terms of agriculture, Shana, that in places like, in regions like the northern regions, you know, agriculture
yeah.
would be an opportunity for massive employment,
mm.
you know. So,
mm-hmm.
but what are the plans? Any plans of like either a government plan or could be other, you know, could be private as well or private partnerships? Of any kind of a scheme, agricultural schemes that is in a pipeline.
Yeah, no, they can. I think they can come up with also to clear up like a space of land to say, okay, this.
I know. I mean, they can. I mean, that's the thing. But is there any plan from any plans that we have, either a government plan or regional plan? Is there any plan in the region that's actually planning for that?
Yes, things are there just because of a lack of communication. I don't want to speak on behalf of the minister of communication,
they know better than us, but
lack of communication and come to people to make them understand, especially with people in the north who are claiming they want like a abattoir, you know, they want Okatomen, okay, you go for standard.
Mm.
Yeah, so they can even put their kettles there, they can even been taught how you can survive in your animals. Now the most of the people still are surviving in the modern days, you know, for nothing, you
yeah.
know. You know, they need to come up to people and to educate them, because we must also go or follow the system of a new technology. Now we are behind the dream on the money.
Yeah.
Yes. For the system, for you to be up to date with the system.
Yeah, that's yeah. true.
Huh? It's a fact.
Right.
Yeah.
No, thanks for coming through, man.
I'm not the last, not least, but you know the system of borrowing money.
Hmm.
Borrowing money is not a problem. The problem to understand this money, because we are not taught in schools or so how to handle money, how to communicate. Those two is a big thing in our life. We are lacking. You don't know how to communicate to people for you to get friends or, you know, to go on with your life. But those two, you don't have this kind of education, communication,
mm.
to communicate with other people, even the knowledge of how can I use my money, even if small, to grow. Only that kind of thing. That's why we just run until we find ourselves on in trouble when we loan the money, but we use the money for something else which are not meant to.
Are you saying the government is operating on the same level?
The government needs just to look at us how can we use our money.
No, I'm talking now the government, the money the government is borrowing. Are you saying that it's operating on the same principle that we don't know how to actually, you know, use our money that we have borrowed?
No, if you borrow money for productions, then showcase us to say this, you bought this money for this infrastructure. For example, we can have more roads, more buildings, then you can say, okay, this money was borrowed for this. But if you borrow money for production, then you use the money for consumption. That's something else.
So what you're saying is that sometimes the money we borrowed is not reflected in outcomes.
The money has been borrowed, but there is no communication. When the money reaching in the country, there's no fair communication to say, now we divide this money. Like, you know, the way this independence was played yesterday.
Mm.
So that's the same way we should also use our money. When you get the money, okay, Oshagati, Orundo, whatever, you get this to see how can we will use this money to build our economy.
Yeah.
Now, when the man gets here, keep quiet. Now, who know who? That's the problem.
All right, man.
Thank you, brother.
Have a beautiful day.
Thanks, brother.
All right. All right. Our time is about 1 minute. Let's give the last one. We'll give you the last minute, 1 or 2 minutes.
Yeah, please. Thank you. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. You come too late, man. So, how are you?
Yeah, I try so many times.
Oh.
Yeah, so nevertheless, it's internal immigration.
Yeah.
And that experience has been going on for a long time.
Yeah.
That's why I suggested that we also need to take an economic opportunity to where those people are migrating from.
Exactly, yeah.
Should be more urban and rural migration. I think the city should be able to take that on. So tomorrow we can discuss more.
All right, man.
Okay.
Thank you for coming through.
Welcome, sir.
All right. And our time, it's 2 minutes past the hour of 10. Let's bring us to the end of this episode of Unpacking the Day. Thank you for those who actually took part, who contributed to the show. And thank you for listening. I know, even if you didn't come through, I know that you're listening. And, let's hand over to Wintuk, those who have actually taken up our young people who are actually migrating from this side to that side. So I hold them accountable. Because everything is around Wintuk. Everything is Wintuk, 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 Wintuk. So, yeah. So, let me say my goodbyes and welcome. Welcome to the France. I hope he's still the one who is actually doing Kutha Moshat this morning. Yeah. I'm leaving you in the capable hand of that France. So, from me, have a very good day. Have a great day ahead. And goodbye until tomorrow.